last instruction that Bhishma Dev is offering to Yudhisthira, the pacifying instruction. It's gone from explaining why reversals happen and how to see them. The next was appreciating Krishna's position as the Super Soul, the cause of all causes, the one who everything that exists is resting upon, and here he is standing before us, appearing as if he's one of us, but I know the truth of Krishna. He's not one of us at all. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so the last verse, which follows from that, but it's a separate idea. He concludes saying, "May my Lord, who is four-handed and whose beautifully decorated lotus face with eyes as red as the rising sun is smiling, kindly await me at the moment when I quit this material body." Really packed up with lots of very nice understanding. Bhishma Dev is a resident of Vaikuntha in his purified state. His service within creation is as a Vasu, one of the categories of demigods, but in the category of demigods, he is, at least here in this case as Bhishma Dev, he's 100% pure devotee, not a mixed devotee, not wanting to be a controller kind of a personality, as is the case with demigods. He's an unalloyed pure devotee of Krishna. The Mahabharata, so this is going back to the very first presentation, the opening remarks that I made. The understanding from Mahabharata is that Bhishma Dev was a Vasu. This curse took place. Dyo, the wife of Dyo, wanted the Kamadhenu of Vashishta. In trying to steal the Kamadhenu of Vashishta, Vashishta cursed them. They appealed for leniency. He gave his leniency. Each of them would return to their position as Vasus immediately after birth, because the mother, Ganga, drowned them in the Ganga. So seven returned. The eighth, who was actually the culprit, thief, he would stay for a long time in the earthly realm, and then return. So the Mahabharata picture, or the Puranic picture, is he would return to his position as a Vasu. The Bhagavatam picture is he's a pure devotee and he's going back to Godhead. And that comes very clearly in this purport of this verse. So, how do we know that? Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam chaja dante kalevaram. Whatever one's mind is fixed upon at the time of death, that state one will attain without fail. So, he's saying it in this verse, and it's what happens in this chapter. His mind is completely fixed on Krishna. He goes to Krishna. So now, which is it? He goes to heavenly realm, or he goes back to Godhead. And the difference of versions has very much to do with the authority source that one looks to. Now, how do we, as you know, young devotees, toddlers in the ways of spiritual life, how do we not make offense and not get bewildered and address this thing in the proper way? Very simple. We do that by recognizing that Srimad Bhagavatam is the Amala Purana. Its conclusion is final. Bhishmadev goes back to Godhead. If there's a discrepancy between this and that scriptural reference, we accept the conclusion of the Bhagavatam. End of discussion. Or at least, now what about the other? The other is not like fiction or imagination, but it's inducing the Puranas in the mode of goodness. What is it that their mission is by the author Vyas? It's to elevate the reader to the quality of goodness. So the reader who becomes elevated to the quality of goodness is then to understand some of the points that Prabhupada has been making here, that is, virtue is always victorious over vice. Doesn't matter how powerful one may be, virtue will be victorious over vice. So a powerful demon ultimately will be the loser. I mean, it's a classic good and evil. So we've covered this plot. And virtue prevails. So the Mahabharata wants to support that understanding. Within the Mahabharata, as within all of the Puranas in the mode of goodness, in fact, all of the Puranas, the personality of Godhead is supreme. Vyasa's despondency after compiling all the Vedas was something's missing, and the something that's missing is that literature which just exclusively glorifies the personality of Godhead. That's the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, how are we to understand then? Bhishmadev went back to Godhead. At the same time, we can appreciate that from the Puranic literature and this understanding of Mahabharata, that one who lives by the quality of goodness will become elevated to a heavenly position, which is true. Just like another Mahabharata and Srimad Bhagavatam difference. What was the destination of the Pandavas? The Pandavas, we understand, they're eternal associates of Krishna. So wherever Krishna is, that's where the Pandavas are. They're always with Krishna, serving Krishna. The eternal associates of Krishna. That's the Bhagavatam understanding. So the Bhagavatam depicts they went to Krishna. Mahabharata depicts they had to see hell, and then they went to heaven. Right? So, there were some mistakes that they made, and so they were responsible for their mistakes, but after that they went to heaven. The Bhagavatam is the ultimate authority that we accept. And then we can, likewise, as with Bhishmadev, we can understand one who lives their life by virtue will have a virtuous destination, although even virtuous people are responsible for their mistakes. That's our understanding. And they'll always be victorious. Now, within the Mahabharata, right in the middle, literally right in the middle of Bhagavad Gita, of Mahabharata is Bhagavad Gita. And Bhagavad Gita is more strongly making emphasis on surrender unto Krishna as opposed to simply living by virtue and theistic conduct. It's not that devotees of the Lord throw out the window theistic conduct. But we put in the priority position surrender unto Krishna as a teaching and way of life, and that which we target and focus our life upon. So that's what Bhishma Dev is saying in this verse. I want to fix my mind on the personality of Godhead. 100%. And he's so kind, because I'm his devotee, he's come so I can fix my mind upon him. Prabhupada makes 3 points in the purport. Why is Bhishma Dev, I'm asking this question, why is Bhishma Dev asking Krishna, kindly await me at that moment when I quit this material body? Why is he asking that? And there are different ways of understanding why he's asking that, 3 different ways. Prabhupada writes, although it was 100% certain that Bhishma Dev was approaching Vaikuntha Dham just after leaving his material body, still, as a humble Vaishnava, he desired to see the beautiful face of the Lord, for after quitting the present body, he might not be in a position to see the Lord anymore. If he didn't go to Vaikuntha, he might not see the Lord anymore. Please come so I can see your face at least at last time before leaving the body. So it's a humble submission. I don't know what my next destination will be. Before leaving this body, let me, for the parting moments, see your face. Your smiling face with eyes as red as the setting sun. A Vaishnava is not puffed up, although the Lord guarantees his pure devotee entrance into his abode. So that's one of the explanations of why he's making this request. The second explanation Prabhupada gives is here Bhishma Dev says, as long as I do not quit this body, in the translation at the top, it's when I quit this body. In the purport is, as long as I do not quit this body. This means that the great general would quit his body by his own will. He was not forced by the laws of nature to do so. He was so powerful that he could stay in his body as long as he desired. So, although his body was fit to be given up, he was remaining in that body because there was some service for him. The service was pacify Yudhisthira, instruct Yudhisthira. So as long as there's some service, one maintains their body. In this particular case, Bhishma Dev, after that was completed, he just gave up his body. So that I can fix my consciousness upon you during this final service that I do and the final act of giving up this body, as long as I remain in this body, please, Krishna, keep yourself visible before me. And the final point, and the larger part of what Prabhupada dedicates the purport to, Bhishma Dev is showing the characteristic of a devotee that he's not His appeal to Krishna is not, please give me a promise that I can go back to the spiritual world, back home, back to Godhead. His request is, please be kind enough upon me that I can fix my consciousness upon you by seeing your face at the time of death. By seeing the form of the personality of Godhead, the mind becomes sanctified. And in that purified state, again, whatever destination Krishna so desires, let me remain in that consciousness, in a purified state of consciousness. A pure devotee is never very anxious to go back home, back to Godhead. Although we're encouraged to have that aspiration. He entirely depends on the goodwill of the Lord. He's equally satisfied even if the Lord desires him to go to hell. The only desire that a pure devotee entertains is that may always be in rapt attention with thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord regardless. End of the paragraph. Prabhupada writes, Bhishma Dev wanted this much only, that his mind be absorbed in thinking of the Lord and that he pass away thus. Please give me constant remembrance of you. And in whatever circumstance of life you wish me to serve, let me have constant remembrance of you. Another way of saying, please keep me engaged in your service. Because when engaged in loving service of Krishna, one is naturally thinking of Krishna. So this is the highest benediction. Please appear within my mind. Throughout my life, throughout my service, and at the time of giving up this body. And I said this twice already, I'll say it again. This has come to be my meditation while preparing and presenting this description about Bhishma Dev. That's exactly what we're doing. What's the purpose of our coming here together in Vrindavan? To hear the ninth chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. What's the purpose? What is it that we would hope to accomplish by doing this? By hearing the glories of Grandfather Bhishma and the wonderful exchange. He's disclosing the exchange of love that he feels for Krishna and that Krishna feels for him. So we're getting this, like, very confidential picture that without disclosure we would never understand. But Bhishma Dev is very kindly, openly disclosing who is Krishna. What is their relationship? How does he feel about Krishna? How does Krishna feel about him? It's purifying. I'm feeling the purification. It's purifying. And to do that in the Holy Dham is extra purifying. Very auspicious. And through the medium of that loving exchange, we're coming. Disclosures are being made about the glories of Krishna and the glories of Bhishma Dev. And that's inspiring and exciting, and it draws one's attention even more, being fastened, being fixed upon Krishna and Krishna's pure devotee. And by thinking of Krishna's pure devotee, any one of Krishna's pure devotees, in this case it's Grandfather Bhishma, the chapter before was Queen Kunti, Krishna's pure devotee. What happens to the heart of one who immerses their thought in Krishna's pure devotee? They become purified. And again, through the medium of that pure devotee's exchange of love with Krishna, Kunti's relationship is different. Bhishma Dev's relationship is different. Yudhisthira's relationship is different. But there's something common to all of them. Unmixed devotion in love. And through the medium of that, again, the glories of Krishna are disclosed as they understand and perceive and experience the glories of Krishna. They're disclosing to us ordinary folks, ordinary covered souls, the glories of Krishna. And when we hear the realized statements of pure devotees of the glories of Krishna, it's purifying. It helps us become attracted to Krishna. And that's purification. Our journey back to Godhead is being enhanced by coming together and doing this activity. At least, purification. In ways that we most likely can't even understand. It's just happening. We just like fasten your seatbelt and take off. Jet propelled. Going down the runway. Because the messages of the Bhagavatam are very, very potent. So, what our assignment is while we're together here is to give rapt attention to these messages. Because they're meant to purify our existence. Bhishma Dev wants that. That's the statement in the purport. Please keep my mind fixed upon you by your... Please, this is the one request. It's glorification, glorification, one request. Please keep my mind fixed upon you by being present before me. If we can keep the topics of this Srimad Bhagavatam in our mind instead of the so many other things that fill the mind, that's purification. And by the culture of Krishna consciousness, we can go about our duties of life. Attached to Krishna means the thought of Krishna will always be there, regardless of what else you're doing. That's how advancement in Krishna consciousness works. You become attached to somebody, and you don't have to like strain your brain to think of that somebody. Thoughts of that somebody come in your mind because you're attached to them. So this is, we're undergoing an exercise to become attached to Krishna. So that when we go about life, thought of Krishna is with us. Constant thought of Krishna is with us. Therefore, the Bhagavat Dharma process is primarily this hearing and chanting process. Fix our mind upon Krishna. So, our prayer, Bhishma Dev's prayer, is may my Lord, who is four-handed and whose beautifully decorated lotus face, with eyes as red as the rising sun, is smiling, kindly await me at that moment when I quit this material body, so we can similarly, following Bhishma Dev's mood and Mahajan footsteps, pray to Krishna that thought of him may constantly appear in our minds. By very carefully taking up this process of hearing and chanting and glorifying him. Glorifying Bhishma Dev, glorifying the instructions that Bhishma Dev is imparting, being guided, let our lives be guided by those instructions, so that we can think of Bhishma Dev and think of Krishna. When you think of Bhishma Dev, you got to think of Krishna. You think of the Pandavas, you got to think of Krishna. You think of the Bhagavatam, you've got to think of Krishna. Yes, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. So let our minds become similarly purified. in that way. Let our intelligence, because coming up are some very nice instructions that are imparting intelligence, how to lead our lives in Krishna consciousness. Okay, so that verse ends this section. Next, Yudhisthira, he's convinced. He's convinced that he should give up his lamentation, he should take to the plan that the Lord has indicated, that is, he should become the emperor. And now he wants to know, my dear grandfather, Bhishma, emperors are supposed to make sure that all orders of society are properly engaged in their prescribed duties. Principal responsibility of the king. So can you please offer instructions in what are the various varnas and ashrams, the duties of the varnashram system, so that I, as king, can, hearing it from you, be fixed in understanding this is the detail of how I'm to execute my duty. Can you please, you have been so paternally affectionate upon us, please, this one last act, in detail, describe the varnashram system. So it's perfectly appropriate that Yudhisthira ask this question, although Prabhupada indicates in the purport, normally one doesn't ask someone who's about to die such a detailed question. Could you please give us a Bhagavatam class before you leave, Bhishma Dev? You give great classes. Could you give one more class, please, as we wave goodbye? So it's, please protect me with your instructions. You've convinced me that I should be the king. Please now help me understand how to execute the duties of a king. Now, in the purport, Prabhupada is describing that there are several purposes of Krishna that are being displayed in this verse. One of those purposes of Krishna is that Yudhisthira is inspired by Krishna from within the heart to ask this question of Bhishma Dev. In the presence, we heard yesterday evening the guest list. Yesterday midday. We heard the guest list. Who is at this event, the passing of Grandfather Bhishma? You know, the greatest rishis in the universe are assembled. Yudhisthira asks Bhishma Dev, a grahastha, a worldly person. He's not king because he's taken this vow to not become king and not have a queen, so he can't become a king. But he's been very much involved in the affairs of the royal family and the government of Hastinapur. So, as opposed to a detached sage, he's asking the worldly Bhishma Dev. And the lesson or the message is, one's ashram and one's varna is not what's most critical. What is most critical? Deep attachment to Krishna. And one who is deeply attached to Krishna, that person is the one who should be questioned first as the ultimate authority on such subject matters as Yudhisthira wants to hear. The Lord's devotee like Bhishma Dev, although apparently living as a worldly man, is far superior to many great sages. Another point is that although Bhishma Dev is wrecked, his body is fit to be given up, riddled with arrows, intense pain, great misery and suffering, but his mind is perfectly clear, his intelligence is perfect in any circumstance. A devotee of Bhishma Dev's caliber can deliver the real thing. Perfect, clear understanding of Krishna consciousness and duties of life. Prabhupada also demonstrated this. In fact, in many ways, when the devotees were present during Prabhupada's leaving his body, it was very remarkable how similar Prabhupada's leaving his body was to Grandfather Bhishma's leaving his body. It was as if Prabhupada could stay or leave at will. Very similar to Grandfather Bhishma's position. And you read the purports of Canto 10, Chapter 14, where Prabhupada is in this emaciated condition, dictating the Bhaktivedanta purports in a microphone that you can barely hear his voice. And the clarity of the message and the scriptural references and the details. I mean, Krishna was speaking through that body. His consciousness was completely fixed upon Krishna. So this is one of the purposes that Krishna is serving in this particular event, and it's important to remember it. But not only what Bhishma is saying, but the circumstance is a circumstance where one should just comfort the person, not ask them for clear instructions on something. Perfect control because of being attached to Krishna. It's not a mechanical thing, it's a devotional thing. Krishna completely controls the senses of one who is fully surrendered and dependent upon him. It's miraculous, it's mystical. And this is what Bhishma Dev is exhibiting. And a third point is that it's exhibiting, through the example of Yudhisthira, a principle of how we conduct our life is being exhibited. Yudhisthira is now convinced, okay, I have to accept Krishna's plan. What's the first thing that he does when accepting Krishna's plan? He consults higher authority to understand, how should I execute this plan? He's not independent, or he's not relying upon whatever acquired knowledge he has gathered through the course of life, although he has plenty. It's just a principle. The principle is placing oneself under the authority of the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. You know, like these three principles that from the earlier section. That's Yudhisthira. That's part of the exaltedness of Yudhisthira, and it's something that we can learn from. Okay, now we've got some service to do. Like reflex, what's the first thing? Beginning run down the road and take care of that service? Or pause, turn your attention to the qualified souls and inquire from them submissively. In what consciousness and in what manner and how to best execute this service. Then one is protected. One is not independent. One is dependent, protected by the Supreme Lord, by the Vaishnavas, and by Scripture. All around protected. That's the way of life of a devotee. The Bhagavatam is teaching us through this one verse these very significant lessons. Bhagavatam is very powerful. If we can I'll just say again what I said earlier. If we can immerse ourselves in these messages of Srimad Bhagavatam, we're in a purified state. So then you just live the message of the Bhagavatam. And you got your best friend with you all the time, Krishna, through the messages of the Bhagavatam. You're protected. The sense of independence is gone. And independence from Krishna, that's the root cause of Maya. Very important lesson. In Jiva Goswami's Bhakti Sandarbha, you know what the Sandarbhas are. There's six divisions of the Sandarbhas. It's a commentary on the Bhagavatam, and in each of the titles of the six parts of the Sandarbhas, Jiva Goswami is taking a very important topic from the Bhagavatam and analyzes the sections from the whole Srimad Bhagavatam that teach us, train us, elucidate the subject of these six topics. So what is bhakti is one topic. It's the Bhakti Sandarbha. Jiva Goswami begins the Bhakti Sandarbha by raising a question. The question is, what's the cause, what's the root cause of being in the material condition of life? And he reasons that if you can understand how material life begins, you can understand how to get out. Like, you know, through what door did we enter this room? There's the door. So now we know how to get out. That's the door we came through. Because you may have forgotten. You were just hanging around the room. How do I get out? It's by the same way you got in. So then he considers, okay, how did we get into this material condition? He goes through a classic, maybe it was this, maybe it was that, maybe it was this, maybe it was that. No, it wasn't this because it wasn't that because it wasn't all these other things. It's one thing. We turned our attention away from Krishna. We acted with this misuse of free will in a spirit of independence from Krishna. He uses the phrase Bahir Mukha Jeev. We turned our face away from Krishna. Independent from Krishna mentality. That's what brought us into the material circumstance of life. So that tells us how to get out. Real simple. Give up the independent spirit and take the dependent spirit. What's the dependent spirit? Krishna, you are the master. I simply want to serve you. And I want to serve those who are very dear to you and intimately packed up at your lotus feet. Bhishma Dev has demonstrated he's got that qualification. Yudhisthira says, Bhishma Dev, how do I do this service? Not just, you know, gee, thanks, Bhishma Dev. You've removed my disturbed state of mind. Now I'm ready to go. See you later, Bhishma Dev. Down the road I go. No. Please instruct me. It's not that Yudhisthira doesn't know. It's just a principle. Being under the protection of such souls intimately connected to Krishna. Oh. Very important lessons of life. So now we'll cover Bhishma Dev's responses. First, at Maharaj Yudhisthira's inquiry, Bhishma Dev defined all the classifications and castes and orders of life in terms of the individual qualifications. In other words, he described Varnashram system. So those of you that like the subject of Varnashram system, this is the section of Mahabharata where it's in detail described. Very, very elaborate. Then, Bhishma Dev systematically in twofold divisions described counteraction by detachment and interaction by attachment. I'll explain that. But first, so the Varnashram system. And this is not just a Mahabharata's topic that really doesn't have relevance for Krishna consciousness. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the elevated Vaishnava that he was, elaborately described the Daivi Varnashram system. He himself demonstrated that he was above the system of Varnashram and then entered into the system, meaning his vrata of chanting 1 billion names of Krishna indicated his spiritual qualification of not needing some regulation according to Varna and Ashram to purify himself so that he could remember Krishna. He was already there. He demonstrated that. Like the six Goswamis, beyond the Varnashram system, fixed in spontaneous devotion to Krishna. But he descended into the Varnashram system by accepting the sannyas order in order to preach Krishna consciousness, to teach by example. And Srila Prabhupada also spoke about the importance of the Varnashram system in the latter part of his mission as an acharya. And so this section of Mahabharata and this little synopsis section in the Bhagavatam gives us some essence ideas of what's this message of Varnashram. So, in the purport, Prabhupada discusses there are universal principles that apply to all Varnas and all Ashrams. So those 9 items listed here in the purport, they're very important. We'll list them. Bhishma Dev advised that for all human beings, 9 qualifications are essential. 1, not to become angry. 2, not to lie. So this is like, 10 commandments. It's like moralities. Fundamental things that everyone should just accept. Don't become angry, do not lie, equally distribute wealth, forgive. 5, to beget children only and by one's legitimate wife. The Bible idea is thou shalt not commit adultery. Here it's saying it in a positive sense. Beget children only in your legitimate wife. 6, be pure in mind and hygienic in body. 7, do not be inimical toward anyone. That's pretty good. 8, be simple. And 9, support servants and subordinates. One cannot be called a civilized person without acquiring the above-mentioned preliminary qualifications. So, universal, those 9 items. Moralities. Ethics, codes to live your life by. Then he goes into the Brahmana Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra. And Bhishma Dev chooses to speak about a Brahmana's position is sense control. What's a Brahmana? What's a learned fellow? that doesn't have control of the senses. Like, it's pretense. Speak something high and live something low. A brahmana must be sense controlled. And therefore, Prabhupada highlights, this is the basis of morality. Sex indulgence, even with a legitimate wife, must also be controlled, and thereby family control will automatically follow. An intelligent man abuses his great qualifications if he does not follow the Vedic way of life. So, this is the function of a brahmana. Now, Prabhupada took this and extended it to a Vaishnav. It's like, you know, a core religious principle, a core four regulative principles. No illicit sex. Sense control. Specific no illicit sex. That type of sense control. And following that, other types of sense control. But fundamental. Because one cannot be progressive in spiritual realization if your senses aren't controlled. If this principle is not observed, there can't be elevation. In the second canto, chapter 6, I think it is. No. There's a very nice verse in the second canto. Maybe chapter 6. Like 6 times in one purport, Prabhupada describes that there's no question of spiritual elevation. There's no question of spiritual elevation if this principle of celibacy appropriate for each particular ashram is not observed. There's no question of elevation. So you can be good and be charitable and so forth, but spiritual elevation isn't going to take place if this one principle is not properly in place. So it's a principle that it's largely not in place in the world. And even, you know, narrow a portion of the world amongst the devotees. It's a principle that devotees, percentage-wise, have some struggle with. But it's a very important principle to put in proper place. Sense control is really essential. It's right at the front end of Bhishma Dev's instructions to Yudhisthira. Continuing, then the kshatriya. So the brahmana's main duty is sense control. Kshatriya's main duty, he's especially advised to give charity and never receive it. Because receiving it is called bribes. Oh, my dear government officer, I'd like to give you a gift. Of course, I have some favors I'd like for that gift. And so a kshatriya is never, one who's taking an administrative post is to never accept charity because it puts one in a compromised position. There's legitimate ways for a kshatriya to be maintained, and that's taxation, and the taxation is because of the services rendered, the protection extended, but not private gifts for an administrator. It corrupts the whole system, corrupts the person and the whole system. He also mentions the kshatriya is not to, it's in italics, the administrator should never pretend to become nonviolent and thereby go to hell. So that means for purposes of protection only, not whimsically, but if use of force is necessary, the use of force is necessary to provide protection. And also in italics, in fighting, the king or the president should never return home without being hurt by the enemy. Meaning, if there's a battle, you're on the battle field. I forget the names. Prabhupada told this story many times. There was one king, and it wasn't so long ago, like, you know, 100 years ago or so, something like that. The king was in a battle, and he was defeated in the battle, and he came home to his palace, and when he got home to his palace, he found the drawbridge was taken away. So he was outside calling, "Open the door." And the queen said, who is at the door? This is not King so-and-so. He would never leave the battle without being killed or hurt in the battle. Who is it out there at the door?" Meaning, so the principle of the Kshatriya, the king, the one who doesn't retreat from a challenge or a confrontation or combat or competition, he'll engage. When given some challenge, he's chivalrous, he'll stay, not retreat. So that's it's a principle of Kshatriya spirit. Vaishyas, their principle is cow protection and agriculture. The Shudras, is they're meant for rendering sincere service to the three higher sections of society. And in italics, Prabhupada writes, "Wine, women, and gambling indicate that the population is degraded to less than Shudra quality." And I'm sorry to report to you that in America today, you know, that the women and the wine has always been there, but gambling is becoming more and more prominent. Casinos, government-operated casinos, so they can pay all the taxes, so they can take care of their fat salaries. Government-operated gambling places. Like, it's proliferating left and right. It's a new way to get some money for the government. It's abominable. It's totally abominable. And the Bhagavatam's indication here, this is a symptom less than Shudra. Very, very unfortunate. Then he goes, so that's the ashrams. Excuse me, the varnas. Now the ashrams. I'll read the paragraph, last paragraph of this purport. The varnas are, so to speak, classifications of different occupations, and ashram dharma is gradual progress in the path of self-realization. Both are interrelated, and one is dependent on the other. The main purpose of ashram dharma is to awaken knowledge and detachment. So it starts with brahmacharya ashram. This is the training ground for the prospective candidates. In this ashram, brahmacharya ashram, it is instructed that this material world is not actually the home of the living being. That's pretty, like, it's cold water in the face. Okay, kids, this isn't your real home. Lesson 101. It's not your real home. You don't belong here. We don't belong here. So don't get attached to it. The knowledge and detachment in the student life of a brahmachari. The conditioned souls under material bondage are prisoners of matter, and therefore self-realization is the ultimate aim of life. The whole system of ashram dharma is a means to detachment. Then, very curious sentence. One who fails to assimilate the spirit of detachment is allowed to enter into family life with the same spirit of detachment. What's that? What did Prabhupada just say? What he said was, in the education of children, in an earlier
earlier stage of their education, they're all trained the same way. These two points. This is not our real home. And one should go through the duties of life with detachment. Knowledge and detachment, knowledge and detachment, knowledge and detachment. In various ways. Now, after some time, there's some split. Some deeply assimilate that message. Some don't as deeply assimilate that message. Such persons then are candidates for grihastha ashram. But they should take up that grihastha ashram, not like abandoning the mood of detachment, but carrying whatever they have assimilated in the knowledge that this world is a temporary situation. It's not our real home. So as I enter into grihastha ashram, it's a temporary stage of life. It's not who I am. It's a transit lounge. It's a passing phase of life which will allow me to enter into the vanaprastha and sannyasa stages of life in a more spiritually qualified condition than I am now. So I should take up this grihastha life with a spirit of detachment. Now, not the spirit of detachment that I don't care for my wife, I don't care for my kids, I don't care for my job, I don't care for nothing, because that's very irresponsible life. When there must be a degree of attachment. And a degree of attachment is both natural and necessary. But there must also be a spirit of detachment. Not the detachment, I don't care, but the detachment that says, this is not my true eternal identity. It's a stage of life that I'm passing through. Let me take it up in a responsible and dutiful way. But it's not who I really am, that spirit of detachment. Therefore, one who attains detachment may at once adopt the fourth order, namely renounced, and thus live on charity only, not to accumulate wealth, but just to keep body and soul together for ultimate realization. Household life is for one who is attached, in italics, and the vanaprastha and sannyas orders of life are, in italics, for those who are detached from material life. The brahmacharya ashram is especially meant for training both the attached and detached. So now we'll go back to the very interesting statement in the verse. Then Bhishma Dev systematically in twofold divisions described counteraction by detachment and interaction by attachment. So he described this principle of brahmacharya life. That is, everyone is trained, regardless of what the future will be, knowledge and detachment. Then, twofold divisions, counteraction by detachment, interaction by attachment. Family life and sannyas life, or continued brahmacharya life. Both require the spirit of detachment, but there is provision for and necessity for a degree of attachment in household life, but not then a license for uncontrolled senses and uncontrolled unprincipled life. I'll just cover a little bit more, given the time that we have, because it continues the next verse, at least in the beginning part, continues with the some instructions about the Brahmachari ashram. So, text 27. Bhishmadev then explained by divisions acts of charity, the pragmatic activities of a king, and activities for salvation. Then he described the duties of women and devotees both briefly and extensively. In the purport, this it is acts of charity, it's primarily the responsibility, or it's of the duties of a grihastha, giving charity is a foremost responsibility. Why? Because the grihastha is in contact, legitimately and by requirement, is in contact with wealth. Conversely, the brahmachari, vanaprastha, and sannyas is not. A brahmachari that goes out and gets a job is not a brahmachari. Or a sannyasi that goes out and gets a job, earns money, not a sannyasi. It's the conduct of a grihastha. So the grihastha that has a job and earns money, now they're in touch with this thing, money. And so that they not simply become attached to money, they should be attached to the principle of giving charity. And in this way, give the maintenance for those who are not earning money and are not attached to doing so, but receive charity. The brahmachari that received charity, vanaprastha sannyasi that received charity. The grihastha maintains. One ashram maintains the other three ashrams, plus them themselves. And that's the Vedic system. So that's the protection against attachment, or one of the protections. As a foremost characteristic or quality of grihastha ashram. So, what's the brahmachari's foremost duty? Perform sacrifice. That's, Prabhupada writes in Bhagavad Gita, the sacrifice of the hearing process. The study. So that's what students do, they study. They sacrifice the hearing process. And specifically, not just academic textbooks, but this thing, just as we're doing now, sacrifice the hearing process for scriptural topics. This strengthens the brahmachari, and it's his foremost occupation, his duty. Sacrifice. Menial service to others, Prabhupada also indicates. Like the Shudra is the legs of the ashram, of the varnas, the brahmachari is the legs of the ashram. The brahmachari just serves all others. He serves the grihasthas, serves the vanaprastas, serves the sannyasis. The brahmachari is the servant of all. Menial service, anything. That's my happiness, to have some service to do. And sacrifice the hearing process. Study of the scripture. And then, in some time, then if their grihastha ashram is the direction of life, this is now in the classic Gurukula situation, that the teacher sees the student is inclined in this way, and then they then give them training according to their inclination. Both varna and ashram. But they still stick with the hearing, or sacrifice of the hearing process of scripture. And that carries over into the grihastha life, vanaprastha life, sannyas life. So the principle is trained in childhood and in the education stage of life. So sacrifice, brahmachari. Charity, grihastha. Vanaprastha, austerities. He doesn't specify what the duty of sannyas is. But duty of sannyas is to provide the teachings and conclusions of the scriptures to others. This is a sannyas dharma. Both by prachar and by achar. This is the achar that's appropriate for the sannyas ashram. Long paragraph about Raja Dharma, you know, a king that rules his citizens by seeing that each of the citizens are engaged in their corresponding and appropriate varna duty and ashram duties. That's what Yudhisthira was making this inquiry for. And Prabhupada explains this is good government when the king does like this. Looking at the italicized part of this purport, the king knew well that the Supreme Personality of Godhead never tolerates any insult to his unalloyed devotees. So the Kshatriya respects the Brahmanas and gives protection to the Brahmanas. It's part of the message of this first canto, protection of Brahminical culture and protection of the cows. These two, out of the five sections of society that are to be protected, these two are most important. Protection of Brahminical culture, protection of the cows. Protection of the elderly, protection of women, protection of children. But foremost are these two. As the system of government, or Raja Dharma. So then, the purport explains, acts of charity, pragmatic activities of a king, and activities for salvation. So activities for salvation, Prabhupada writes, as far as salvation is concerned, one has to conquer the principles of lust, anger, unlawful desires, avarice, and bewilderment. So it's a nice list, I'll read it. To get freedom from anger, one should learn to forgive. To become free from unlawful desires, one should not make plans. By spiritual culture, one is able to conquer sleep. By tolerance only can one conquer desires and avarice. Disturbances from various diseases can be avoided by regulated diets. Anyway, talkativeness can be avoided by gravity and silence, and prowess, by prowess one can avoid fearfulness. Perfect knowledge can be obtained by self-cultivation. One must be free from lust, avarice, anger, dreaming, etc., to actually attain the path of salvation. So on the topic of salvation, Bhishma Deva is describing conquering enemies so that we can then become liberated from being slaves or servants to bad habits and lower qualities. Now, the higher principle is surrender to Krishna. And by that attachment and surrender to Krishna, all good qualities will follow and be decorations upon the Vaishnava. Then there's theistic conduct. So a Vaishnava also lives by theistic conduct. If there's some transgression made by another, you cultivate forgiveness. Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita. Or you tolerate the injustice. Tungstatiksha subharata. But literally forgive the other person. Forgive means you forget. You just let it go. And so forth. So these are principles of code ethics or codes of conduct to live your life by. Like niyamas. Regulations, ways to regulate your life so that you're closer to that position where you can surrender to Krishna. follow those things, and that helps you in your surrender to Krishna. And it makes you more peaceful. Makes you more eligible for spiritual life. Or using a metaphor of the Bhagavatam, it's a way of making wet wood dry wood so it can then ignite. Due to contact with the lower modes of nature, we may struggle with some of these things. And so this advice of Bhishma is very helpful. And if we have our hearts open to Bhishma Dev's, the position he represents, as Yudhisthira does, if we can also have our hearts open to Bhishma Dev, a Mahajan, who simply wants to guide souls to the path of perfection, then it will benefit just by hearing these instructions. In the final paragraph that we'll discuss this morning, the last item taught by Bhishma Dev was the process of pleasing the Lord. We are all eternal servants of the Lord, and when we forget this essential part of our nature, we are put into material conditions of life. The simple process of pleasing the Lord, for householders especially, is to install the deity of the Lord at home. By concentrating on the deity, one may progressively go on with the daily routine work, worshipping the deity at home, serving the devotee, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, residing in a holy place, and chanting the holy name of the Lord are all inexpensive items by which one can please the Lord. Thus, the subject matter was explained by the grandfather to his grandchildren. Any discussion? Talks by Grandfather Bhishma Dev. Anything? Yes? Sometimes. I'd like to give an answer that's in context with what we've been reading. One can progress in spiritual life by associating with those who have spiritually progressed, those that are spiritually accomplished. And one of the ways to associate with such persons is by the hearing process. So, specifically, during this visit here in Vrindavan, we're hearing about Grandfather Bhishma. And if we consider the really very elevated qualities of Grandfather Bhishma, or for that matter any qualified devotee, that awakens inspiration within the heart. Like, for example, if Grandfather Bhishma can speak so eloquently as he is doing here with Yudhisthira, whatever difficulties I may have, surely I can complete 16 rounds. It's just like taking an inspiration. Whatever difficulty there may be, it's not too great. I can do it. I'm inspired, you know, specifically in this, from this chapter. Bhishma Dev really inspires me. Or you can think of other Vaishnavas from scripture or other Vaishnavas that you know, and you think of their wonderful qualities and you can take inspiration from them. And probably if I were to ask you a question, could you name some devotees that have really inspired you in your Krishna consciousness to help you get to where you are now? Yeah, there's this devotee, that devotee, this devotee, that devotee. And so think of those devotees. Think of the instructions that you receive from those devotees. Think of the lessons of life that you've been imparted and how your life has been molded in such a beneficial way. Thinking of those elevated persons is a way of associating with those elevated persons, bringing inspiration into the heart. And when the heart is inspired, devotional service flows. That's advancement. So the recommendation I'm giving you is, in simple language, act from the heart. And when the heart is inspired, you can do. Advancement naturally flows from acting in an inspired way. Now I'll give a couple more answers that can simply augment that one. Think of those things that when you do those things conscientiously and nicely, you really get a lot of strength. And whatever those things are, put energy there so that you become strong. And then when you're situated in a position of strength, then you can address those things that are less strong from the position of strength. So if it wasn't the circumstance here, I might ask you in a dialogue, please tell me, give it some thought, tell me what are those things that when you do them carefully and attentively, you really get strength. So then, just write it down for yourself in your own journal. What are those things? Nurture those things. Give energy to those things. And feel the strength. And then you distribute that strength in areas that may be less strong. And continue with those things that give strength and then distribute. Act from a position of strength. Like, some devotees, they really like studying. Some devotees really like chanting. Some devotees really like deity worship. Some devotees really like just serving the devotees. Some devotees like cooking. Some devotees like this. Some devotees like that. Whatever that thing is for you, give energy to that. Do it very conscientiously, attentively. Put energy, invest consciousness in that. Then step two. Okay, what are some areas that I need to improve in my devotional life? Because that was your question. How can I advance? How can I go forward? Take strength from those things and apply some of that strength over here and over here. And you'll be able, better able to do those other things and thus make advancement.
practical?
Another kind of like this universal description that Bhishma Dev, the things that everybody must do in order just to be a civilized human being. For a devotee, there's something that's universal. That if we want to make advancement in Krishna consciousness universally, we have to give special attention to chanting. The quality with which each morning or the parts of the day when you're chanting your rounds, the qualitative manner that you're trying to give exclusive attention to the chanting of Krishna's holy name. Just, it's the most important part of your day. And if you can train yourself in that way, at least this part of the day, maximum attention. And whatever helps, let me do that. So, whatever it may be. Early in the morning, or in a quiet place, or with a group of devotees, or whatever it is. Put some great effort into chanting the holy name, and you'll make advancement. In all other parts of the angas of bhakti, from chanting the holy name. And that comes from practical experience, and it's also Rupa Goswami's and Jiva Goswami's and our Acharya's instructions. And another is make a very strong relationship with those that are guiding you in spiritual life. And you'll advance in Krishna consciousness. I made this comment a few years ago. It was in our Puri Parikrama of whatever that year was, 2003. Just in the course of those discussions, I made a comment that, and a few people picked up on it. And commented, you know, brought it to my attention afterwards. One of the most outstanding things they gained from the whole visit to Jagannath Puri was this statement. As a sannyasi, I travel all the time. So I get a chance of seeing like little snapshots of people's spiritual lives. You know, you're living with everybody and you know everybody, but I come and I go and come back. Go and come back. So my observation is that when a devotee has those devotees that make the most advancement are those devotees that have very strong relationships with those that are guiding them in spiritual life. Conversely, those that do not have such strong relationships do not make strong advancement in Krishna consciousness. They may remain in Krishna consciousness. They may progress some in Krishna consciousness, but not to the same degree or scale as those that have very strong relationships with those that are guiding them in Krishna consciousness. So secure that relationship. Doesn't mean ignore everybody else. Not at all. But make sure that relationship is very strong. And it doesn't mean like there has to be lots of communication, blah, 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 correspondence, and, you know, phone calls. Just, you know, it's from the heart, again. So back to the first point. Act from the heart. Do the primary things with your whole heart. As much as the capacity is there for you to do so, or the mindfulness to do so. Act from the heart. And in this relationship with those that are guiding in your spiritual life, make that a strong relationship. You'll advance. Doesn't mean there'll be no troubles or struggles, but you'll advance. Okay. I have a fear in my mind to go into Grahastha Ashram, some insecurity for my direction in life and my progress. I don't understand properly how Grahastha Ashram is helpful in my devotional life. The conception in my mind is, as I am a girl and not very pure, so I have to accept Grahastha Ashram. It's not just because one is a girl and not very pure. There are so many examples of pure devotee Vaishnavis who accepted Grahastha Ashram. It's from a religious perspective, it's part of the role of a woman to be always in a protected situation. It's part of the role of a woman to be always in a protected situation. Even if one is the most qualified person on the planet, to be in a protected situation. So, that taking of Grahastha Ashram, so the question is specifically from a Mataji, so I'll answer it from that perspective. The facility of Grahastha Ashram for a woman is, at least it provides the opportunity, there's no guarantee of anything in this world, but provides the opportunity for protection. And the protection is, like this question the other day about shyness, it provides a way of a woman reposing natural propensities for affection upon one place. And being in a mood of serving one's husband as a qualified wife would do, there's protection from one's own impure desires by serving one, religiously serving one's husband. And if the husband is qualified, we'll say, assuming that the husband is qualified, then one can further progress in spiritual life by the qualifications of the husband. And the husband is taking energy or strength from the service of the wife. It's just a natural part of the male psychology. One becomes strengthened, encouraged by the faithful wife. So that helps the husband go further in his religious duties, and the wife benefits by that spiritual qualification, spiritual and religious qualification of the qualified husband. The husband gives to the wife, and the wife gives to the husband. It's an arrangement of assisting one another. Everything becomes spoiled if the mentality becomes the license for sense gratification mentality. And then both the husband and the wife suffer greatly. But if instead of thinking, now I have my license for sense gratification, but here is a proper way to serve. Husband serving, wife serving, and we serve together. Then it's a fortress. It provides strength for both parties, as long as that principle is in place. So one of the ways to make sure, one of the ways that ensures that principle is to see, I just had this correspondence with one Grahastha who said, you know, a long time ago I heard this point that the husband should see his wife as the spiritual daughter of the spiritual master, and I couldn't understand it. Now I'm starting to understand it. So it's the difference is, in the material conception, husband seeing the wife, this is my property. And in the spiritual conception is seeing, she is the spiritual daughter of our spiritual master. And so, seeing the daughter, seeing the wife as the spiritual master's property, then I'm serving my spiritual master by helping my wife make advancement as she is helping me make advancement. We're serving the spiritual master together. It takes the thing off of a commodity and property and exploitation platform to the service platform. So it's what's to be afraid of in Grihastha Ashram is material consciousness, but material consciousness is to be feared in any ashram, in any gender, in any country, in any situation. Being in a material consciousness about life. And to be in a religious, duly sanctified relationship between husband and wife, it's a great opportunity. It's a great facility. It's primarily recommended. Unless one has the, going back to the verse that we read this morning, a very deep sense of detachment, genuine detachment, so much so that one, I'm very happy. I'm very happy in the situation that I am. I can say that for myself. I'm very happy being a sannyasi. There's never been, and Prabhupada spoke like this. One should not enter the sannyas ashram if one at all has attraction for enjoying with the opposite sex. So if the mind is dwelling like that, I have this attraction of enjoying the company of, in the case of a man, enjoying the company of a woman, or in the case of a woman, enjoying the company of a man. One has that mentality at all and takes up a renounced position. That's not a renounced position, that's pretense. So the other is more common and quite natural. So it should be taken up in a religious way. So that means before taking up household life, there should be proper training in Krishna consciousness and proper training how to take up grihastha duties properly. Then one can take up grihastha life. And it's beneficial. It's a fortress. That careful training is rare, hard to come by, especially in this age. I'm looking at my watch, and I think I'm going to take these questions later so that you can have your translation, we can have breakfast, we can get back together at 10 o'clock, hopefully. See what happens. You got the questions, we'll see about answering them later. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.